honest, yes, it took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
All right, lads, usually on a Thursday there aren't games to talk about, but there is this Thursday because there was a full round of football in Laois, there was a full round of football in Offaly, obviously because of the lockdown. And in Dublin, we have the 8 team through to the quarterfinals. So Raheny beat Plunkett's last night, 2-13 to 2-10. Brian Fenton scored 1-3. Brian Fenton, Brian Howard in midfield. And I'm going to start talking a bit like Johnny Giles here, Conan, and say I'd imagine Brian Howard is the midfielder that sits, and Brian Fenton is the midfielder that goes forward. But you can alternate that if you want.
if you're Johnny Giles, you can send the number 8, can sit in the number 9 fella, can go forward.
Yeah. In my time, there was no such thing as a holding midfielder.
They also had Conor Talty, he used to work for us. Like he used to play with Clare, but he's just injured this year. So that would have freed up Brian Howard usually for them because he played midfield. But it's not a bad backup plan. They have the two best midfielders in the country playing midfield.
No, it's not a bad, especially with Brian Fenton. If it's a situation and you're just going after scoring, like Fenton scoring 1-3, when Brian Fenton goes forward, Conor, he's an absolute monster. And you see it sometimes with Dublin, but not always. But if the agreement is for Brian Howard, who can play in the defence, you know, to maybe mind the house and you go forward every time you want, Fenton, left, right, and he's got a great shot on him for goals as well. It's something that you would look forward, you'd pay, the old cliche, you would pay money to see him.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose the only thing about that, if Brian Howard is sitting, you're depriving Brian Howard the chance of getting forward. He's no mean man to kick a few points or anything like that too. And I'd say at that level, like I'd say while Brian Fenton bombs forward, he does plenty of defensive work and he puts in a shift at the back as well because he tends to do that for Dublin, never mind. So like at that club level as well, I'd say he's well able to get all over the park. But by the sounds of things last night, they were in a bit of trouble earlier on, and then Fenton just comes up and kicks the traditional goal really and busts him in the driving seat just before the water break. So looking forward to see how they get on now, kind of, because as I said, I haven't been exposed to Raheny at club level, but just with those names alone, hopefully we'll see plenty of them now before the Dublin Championship finishes up.
Yeah, and there was these games in Laois and Offaly, like I mentioned. Port Laois won, only scored 1-8-5 against Ballyland. They have a very new look forward line. No Brian McCormack, who retired, no Craig Rogers. Brian Glynn is injured. Paul Catalan went off after 10 minutes. He's just getting injured all the time now for the last couple of years. So there's a lot of new faces in the forward line for Port Laois. So it'll be interesting to see how they get on this year. Port Harlington beat Stradbally, and O'Dempsey scored 7 goals against Cortwood. So they're kind of the two teams that could put it up to Port Laois. And Forbann and Road, the two big teams at the moment in Offaly, they look like they're going to top their groups and get through. Keane Johnson scored a beautiful goal. Did you see this? So you know I'm a Keane Johnson fan. Although, I'm waiting to see Keane Johnson start doing it inter-county level before. I'm not going to follow Keane Johnson if he's just a brilliant player for Forbann and sticking, because it was a beautiful goal off the inside of his boot, generated loads of power into the top corner. I'm not sure that either of you see that goal. I saw on Offaly TV.
Yeah, just off the stanchion as well, which always makes it look better when it points back out. It was quality. It's just the way, like, it looks so easy for him. He saw your man coming from behind him and he just stopped, bounced it, let him fly past him, and just, as you say, inside of the boot, just caressed it with a lot of power, which is really nice to see. But
can you caress with power now, Conan? I have to pull you up on that one.
No, I think you can, yeah.
I'm not sure you can caress with power.
Absolutely, because that was my point, the fact that he was able to do that. I was actually going to talk about the O'Dempsey's game. Did you see Mark Barry's goal in that to the back heel?
No.
Unbelievable. He went through. You said they were playing Cortwood, and he went through, but somebody sort of stripped the ball out of his hand, so it turned around. He was about 6 yards out, and he sort of grabbed the ball like with his studs and slid it back, and the keeper was coming out this stage, and he just flicked it with the back heel in past the keeper. It was brilliant stuff.
Very good. I must have a look at that on Leash TV. This is great. Actually, we keep saying these streaming services, you know, these goals are popping up out of nowhere, and even unusual goals, which we're going to get to in a minute. Emo beat Kelleshin, and nobody outside of Emo and Kelleshin, I don't want to be too harsh, would be too concerned about this result. Kelleshin were in the county final, was it last year? I think it was last year. Portlaoise actually struggled to beat them. They're not a big club. But their manager is Carlo Dwyer, who has a very famous father who was not a bad manager back in his day. Carl's obviously an all-star footballer himself. So he played, he was on Game On 2FM last night. He says, we played against Emo and I was at home watching it on Facebook. I wouldn't be a big fan of Facebook, but unfortunately I had to resort to those tactics. I was in contact on the phone with the chairman and one of the selectors. Because it was so windy, it was hard to get the message through at times, but it was the only thing I could do in the circumstances. And I'm thinking of Carl O'Dwyer watching this game with his team and making changes in his boxer shorts in the sitting room, Connor. Like, I mean, it's some picture to paint, there's no doubt.
So what's his story then, Willie? Is he based in Kildare that he couldn't make the game, or yeah, what was
based,
the...
He's based in Kildare and he's under lockdown. Sorry, I should have been a bit clearer about that. Yeah, he's living in Kildare and they can't leave the county, so he had to watch it on Facebook.
So when I saw it first and he looked on Facebook, I watched a few games lately on like teams' Facebook channels, whatever. And with all due respect to people who are trying really hard to get them, you know, out to their fans and stuff, it's not the same as watching it on TV. You know, if somebody's filming with a tablet or a phone at the side of the pitch. But I actually went on to the Kelleshin Facebook page. So they must have got a professional production company to film it. It was actually a really, really decent job. But
was it in Amore Park?
I couldn't see that. Like the picture was very. I don't think so, because I would have noticed the stand in the background. But it was just like it looked like the camera was very closely following the action. So the only thing I'll say about Carlo Dwyer is that like all he would have been able to see was what was happening actually on the ball.
Right.
He wouldn't have got a view of what was happening. You know, you need the bigger picture when you're there and you can watch from the stand or the sideline. You can see what's happening down the other end of the pitch. So I'd like to think that his responsibility in his selectors, that he would have given, you know, a bit of faith in his selectors, that he would have trusted them to make the decisions. But maybe not, if that's what he's saying, if he was telling them what to do from the comfort of his own couch.
Well, that's the thing, because Neffet kind of screwed Leash over by not giving them enough time. All those games should be in Amore Park. So the Port Leash match, I didn't get to see it. It wasn't online on Monday night because it was out in Stradbally, and there's no Leash TV out there. You know, these TV streams are only in the county grounds. So, like, I would imagine that every other game from now on will be in Amore Park when they have a bit of time to spread it across the Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But on this occasion, you know, with people maybe working or whatever, they weren't able to get as many games in Amore Park. So that's probably the story. See this Antrim goal anyways, Conan. We have to move on to this because this is on the Antrim GA Twitter account. And this was a match between Neamhaina and St. Gall's. Now, St. Gall's are 7 points up at this stage. And it's in the second half. It's the second water break. And what happens is, now, to be fair, both teams take the piss here, as far as I'm concerned, because the Antrim Twitter account put out the whole water break. And Neamhaina starts strolling back out, casual as you like, after about a minute and 45 seconds. Gall still aren't even appearing on the 2 minute mark. And the Neamhaina lads just about reached their positions. The referee blows his whistle and the Neamhaina goalkeeper kicks it out. They catch it in midfield. Now Gauls have seen this kick out coming out. They're frantically running back to try and cover their goals. But the ball, as most managers will always say, the ball moves faster than the players retreating, as some of our analysis used to say when we're talking about blanket defences. And they couldn't get back in time and the ball was tapped into an empty net. Like, I mean, I say good enough for them, good refereeing. And if every team was to start taking the piss on 2 minutes water break, we'd have a complete farce of a game altogether, Conan.
Bang on. I was happy to see it. I can understand a bit of their frustration where you were saying that both teams were taking the piss. And, you know, they were a little bit, but I think in the ref's defence, he called them all out after, I think, the Antrim account says 65 seconds. And by 2 minutes, Gauls were still in a huddle. They weren't even looking like they were coming back out. And I don't know if that was deliberate or were they just having a team talk or... Either way,
you're not allowed to have a team talk. Like, you go over, get a quick drink, and come back into your positions. That's it. They might have to go to the extremes of banning managers from coming down near the players.
Yeah, it's a purpose for a drink for 60 seconds. Like, you don't need, you'll see them in 13 minutes time. Don't worry about it. And it's like the great thing about that is that they won't do it again. And hopefully a lot of teams won't. And maybe a lot of referees will sort of take stock of that and think, geez, I might do that because I got caught with that last week or whatever else. And the only thing I'd be worried about is, you know, maybe did he do it in the first half? If that happened, you know, just as long as there's consistency in it and he's not just picking on a team or whatever.
Well, that's the thing. Their goalkeeper, I'll get to him in a minute, he was saying that there wasn't as much urgency in the first half. But here's the point on this, Connor. Why does a manager, like Conan says, they're going to talk to him in 13 minutes, right? There's nobody at the feckin' game. You can get any message you want with a good shout into any single bloody player. Do you know what I mean? This idea that these managers think that they have to get the team into a huddle and talk out nonsense. Talk to them. Run up the field and talk to the forwards. Shout in at them. The player you want to do, shout to the backs. There's nobody there. You're not in a Pat Croke Park on All-Ireland final day.
Am I wrong in saying that you're not allowed any Mair Ishkas anymore, but am I wrong in saying that you're not allowed to still have one runner as well? If you absolutely need to get messages on, you know, during the game as well as having the water break. But we've discussed this before, is that, like, I don't know, is it a power trip for some managers that because they have their players again, you know, 15 minutes into the game, that they feel that they have to get messages across or something like that because they're all gathered in the huddle. Whereas the whole purpose of the game is just to go over, get a quick drink and go back out again. But I'm with you, lads. I mean, like, I suppose what this nips in the bud is the potential for teams to take the piss. And like Conan said there, whether it's deliberate or not, I don't know. But like, you probably will get a case of some teams making a deliberate statement saying, you know, we'll let them out there. We let them out there for 30 seconds and we'll delay them, whatever. But if every referee takes the attitude that this guy did, and he gave them plenty of warning. I mean, just looking back at again, he called back after a minute. He blew again 30 seconds later. The ANA players started to come out then. He blew again, I think, after 2 minutes when all the ANA players were out. So it wasn't as if the St. Gall's lads didn't get enough warning. So hopefully, like, I would imagine that this has got across the country and that every manager will be telling any team who's playing this weekend, any manager will be telling their players, listen, lads, you saw what happened up in Antrim. Don't take the piss for the water break. Leave it to a minute and that's it.
Yeah, exactly. So if you want to see this, go to the Antrim GAA Twitter account. So Chris Kerr is the Gall's goalkeeper and he's been given out about this. He was saying there wasn't as much urgency in the first half from him to play for play to restart. And he says, listen, by apologising to the management and players at the end, he showed he made a mistake. So the referee unbelievably made a mistake, Conan. But you were checking this out with David Goff, and David Goff reckons he made no mistake whatsoever.
Yeah, like I'd be surprised if the ref was apologising for making a mistake. I'd say he was probably going over and explaining himself or, you know, sorry about that, he hadn't come out or whatever. Like, but yeah. Yeah. I just text David. I'm starting to feel bad because every time something like this comes up, he's trying to take a step away from refereeing at the minute. But he said, like, you know, he's completely within his rights. The rule states it's a maximum of 1 minute. And the best part of it is that it's not an official rule. It's just a note or a recommendation. So the ref can do what he wants to get the play going again. And he was within his rights.
Yeah. Are you sure David Goff wasn't nervous about getting the coronavirus through the phone now or anything like that, talking to you on the phone? You know how nervous he is.
I have no comment on that.
All right, we'll leave that. That was just funny. And listen, it was funny, and it's a lesson to everybody to just cop on, take over, get a drink. Don't even be entertaining your manager and get back on the field, or else you could concede a goal like Nevena did. Right, guys, I want to talk about this split club season here because I don't know what to think about this. I'm coming and going on this and it kind of wound me up listening to Derek Kent. So obviously Wexford got a lot of criticism. I remember before this even happened, Niall Catalan was talking about splitting a club season and I was kind of laughing at this going, Jesus, give us a break. We're not going down, you know, let's split the intercounty of the club season first without this even coming up. But now Derek Kent is delighting in his success so much that we have to kind of talk about this because I think that was him, pretty sure that was him who gave the cup to Simon Donoghue. And he made a point of saying what a success it was. And then he was talking on RT Radio and he was saying it was a major success and a genuine jewel club that won the hurling in both senior and intermediate. I think playing blocks in hurling and then football is the way forward for Wexford for however long, we don't know. So, like, I mean, this is a very exceptional year. So they think that it's been a success because the hurlers are all happy and they got a great championship 5 weeks in a row. They got a bit of momentum into it without the distractions, you know, of football and everything. But what about the footballers? Because Simon Donoghue was saying to me, Conan, on Monday, about, you know, that they have maybe 10 or 12 of the team. So the footballers would have been training away there with maybe 7 or 8 lads for the last 4 or 5 weeks. That's not really fair with them. And they, now they're out next week. So they have a whole load of hurlers coming in on Tuesday night after celebrating. That's not good preparation for them. On the flip side of that, right? So the hurlers are out, are out first. If there's a Leinster provincial club, now the Wexford, now the Sheil Mailleirs hurlers are after winning their county final. They have to train without all their dual players, which there's loads of them, the whole way up to a Leinster club match because the football championship will be going on, and they'll get a good run in that. I thought it wasn't fair on the team, on the code coming second, and that's probably a fact more so this year. But when provincial championships start, you know, next year, hopefully, again, it actually won't be fair on either code.
I just don't think, it's a good idea then, because both of your points are right. Like, it's not fair on the team coming second unless you had a gap of 4 weeks, you know, between the hurling and football. As you say, they're out next week. If they were able to say, we'll start training 6 weeks out or whatever, we'll have the hurlers back 4 weeks out, that'll be great. But it's not the case, and it can't be the case. And if there's a provincial back, it's not a long term solution. And I thought, like, when we were talking about splitting the season, it just needed to be done in club and county, because I know there are sort of political differences between some clubs, like, you know, between the hurlers and footballers. But we had spoken about this before. It's dream stuff for a dual player when you're going week on and week off. When you have a hurling match one Sunday and football the next Sunday, you're coming in every week and you're just preparing for a match. So I think if you asked the dual players and that they had that scenario where it was just club, they'd be happy to go week on, week off. And it's more long-term sustainable as well if you can play provincial with it.
But I don't know. It's getting a lot of support in Wexford. And Simon Donoghue, who is a dual player and from a dual club, the county champions, he said on Monday, from speaking to hurlers and footballers, they're only delighted with it because you know what's happening. There's no swapping. You've the same group of players going to train in two nights a week and playing matches. There's no crossover. I think it's the way to go forward. Now, obviously, Simon Donoghue is someone who's going to come from 5 weeks focusing on one and then 5 weeks focusing on the other. He's a dual player. I'm talking about, Connor, the hurlers, the people who just play hurling in his club and the people who just play football in his club. They're the people that's a little bit unfair of. Simon Donoghue plays both, isn't that grand?
Yeah, well, that suits him. It's perfectly set up for him. Do you know what I mean? So, like, I'm not part of a dual club, so I don't know what it's like, but, like, so if it's a split that you're talking about there, if it's week on, week off for the hurlers and the footballers, do the hurlers take a break on football week, you know, for training, and do the footballers take a break, you know, the players that play football only, do they take a break when it's time for the hurlers to train? I don't know how that works, but if that was the case, that...
No, well, they'd stay ticking over with lower numbers, obviously. Like, I mean, they go up and do something.
Yeah, well, I suppose that seems better to me. That seems better to me if you're doing it kind of week on, week off. You've one training with all, 1 week with all the hurlers, and then you've 1 week, you know, just with the footballers, as opposed to waiting. You know, it might be 6 weeks when you've nothing at all, or just the 10 lads down training, and then you have the hurlers coming back in. Do you know what I mean? So, like, it seems to me that, like, maybe, like, I don't know what the majority of club players in Wexford are like. Do the majority of them play, you know, hurling and football? It seems ideally set up for that. But there'd be other counties where I would imagine that it's not as clear cut as that, and that the players who play hurling only and football only would be losing out. But it doesn't seem to me. Whatever, like, it's complicated either way, I think, but it doesn't seem to me that it will be as unqualified a success in every county as the Wexford chairman seems to think it is in Wexford.
Yeah, maybe it's a thing that, like, I mean, I don't think it'll take off in other counties. Personally, I think playing on alternate weekends treats both codes exactly fairly, whether it might not be ideal, and it has some issues. Like Conor mentioned, the politics of it, like, for example, if you're more of a hurler than a footballer, but you play both, you know, you might be minding yourself on the football week, you know, that kind of a way. Whereas if you split them, you'll be able to completely go for it for both. And in a way, it promotes the dual player, which, you know, is a dying kind of thing in the GA a little bit, that, you know, if you're predominantly a hurler, but you're not a bad footballer, but you just love hurling, and sometimes football will get in the way of your hurling, if you split them, that's given the dual players a perfect opportunity to play both. So there is an advantage in splitting it from that point of view, Conan.
Yeah, it could be such a nightmare. I think you were saying if you were going into the Leinster club and then you're not training with the hurlers anymore, you're training with the footballers. But I can just envisage that, where it's like, surely, like, you know, what comes first then? Is it the first round of the Wexford Championship or is it the first round of the Leinster Club in hurling? You know, so there's your perfect example then where the hurlers will definitely want you because you're going for a Leinster title. But yeah, it's championship season with the footballers. So then what do you do, like, as a dual player? I think that's then when it's not able to work out for those guys and they're caught in the middle. If it's week on, week off, you avoid that. Maybe it's not ideal, but I think it's the only way to do it if you're going to play two sports, basically.
I think so. That's my thoughts on it. But, like, I mean, a lot of people, I was tweeting about this, and a lot of people from Wexford were coming back, you know, strongly defending the split season. So, look, without criticising it too much, let whatever county do what they want. I don't see it taking off myself. It could take off in counties where they're predominantly football and don't care about hurling. The football might go first, and then, you know, if you're in a provincial title, in a provincial championship, well then the hurlers will get screwed anyways whenever that starts. And likewise in the hurling traditional counties, I think whichever goes first is the stronger code, and it supersedes the other one, and that's why I don't like it. But maybe some counts, you know, a lot of the Ulster counties don't care about hurling, you know, are much stronger at football, and then you have a lot of the hurling counties that don't care about, or the complete opposite way around. Maybe they're the counties that will choose to go with the split season. The Cool Camps, lads, there's some stats on this about what a success they were. So there were 71,000 children took part in there was 900 Cool Camps over 5 weeks. And there was just one reported withdrawal because of the coronavirus. So, like, I mean, that's incredible. They should have had 80,000, but obviously Laois, Offaly and Kildare were locked down and they couldn't do it. But the contact tracing for the one case, the source of the infection was at another event, and there was no transmission within the Cool Camps. Now, we know children are much lower risk, etc. But for 71 children, Conan, to pass through those Cool Camps and have no case and have no transmission of the one positive case that was got somewhere else is a huge credit to the organisers of the Cool Camps and a huge credit to the GEA as a whole. And also sometimes on this topic, we can be a little bit kind of, you know, our instinct is to defend the GEA on the crowds and defend, you know, the organization that we're, you know, part of. But at the same time, like, these stats are very, very strong.
Absolutely. I mean, you see 71,000, like, that's really just jumps out at you. And you're right, like, to praise the GEA as well. Obviously, like, we can talk all we want about fresh air and the risk being lower outside and stuff, but you're doing something right as well to have no infections. And like, that's including, you know, parents and stuff dropping people down and all
exactly,
the coaches and everybody involved in getting this thing going, and like, to come through that without a hitch, like, that's exactly what we wanted back in March and April when we were worried about where we were going as a world. But like, to be able to have 71,000 children out playing in the Cool Camps, that's amazing.
Yeah, exactly. I saw a tweet from Liam Sheedy there yesterday, and he says, super article, retention is a massive challenge, but equally a super opportunity if it becomes the number one priority. The GEA has so much to offer our young, and losing 6 out of 10 players from the sport between 12 and 21 has to change. And it was an article from Christy O'Connor in the Evening Echo, and it was very good. And he had some quotes from Buck Anderson, who is New Zealand Rugby Union's youth development officer. And whatever it is about New Zealand, like, I mean, they are kind of world leaders in rugby. But, how are they so successful? How are they so good? What do they do at youth level? And I thought this was very interesting. So Anderson speaking about having a KPI, key performance indicator, for anyone who doesn't know what a KPI is. So he's speaking about having a KPI for all their coaches of teenage teams. So the key performance indicator they have is how many I don't like the word kids, how many children come back to be coached by you next year, as opposed to how many championships you won. Like, isn't that some way to think about it? So he goes on to say, the more children you can retain, and if those children believe you've made them better, and that you've provided them a great environment that's given them a love of the game, and they come back, then you've done your job. I don't know. The competitive element of the GEA at underage level, I think it's too much. But that's a fantastic way of looking at it, Connor. Don't come back to me with what you've won. Come back to me with how many children you didn't lose the following year. Because there's a strong memory in my head, because, like, of being at underage games, especially at under 12, only you pick one team and you pick another team, and a poor region. And it used to be me in school. I remember it strongly being left to the last one or two to get picked. And you feel absolutely demoralised. It used to happen to me out in rugby because I was useless when I was younger. And I didn't want to go back. I used to say to my mother, I don't want to go back out there. I'm always, well, I didn't actually tell her why, because I was too embarrassed, that you're the last one to be picked. You know, this kind of thing, and you're not on the team and you're a sub, and it's not fun, you know. So to have that idea with the coaches that you're not going to be judged on what you win, you're going to be judged on how many children come back the next year and don't drop out. It's a great way to look at it.
Yeah, it's really refreshing, I think. And just to say that, like, if we're going to take Anthem from New Zealand, I prefer this rather than the whole sweep in the shed stuff that seems gone through the GAA in recent years. But as you said, Willie, I think everybody or a lot of people have a personal story that can relate to your personal story there in various different sports. They might have been great at GAA, but then maybe kind of excluded a bit of rugby or soccer or stuff like that. And no kid, no child at that age wants to be exposed to that sort of pressure. Do you know, like it's about you know, your development, and as I said, like, how many are going to come back next year. And to be fair, like, I don't think this attitude is pervasive in across the GAA, but like, there would be a lot of clubs that would have it, and like, funnily enough, or surprise, it's the biggest clubs and the clubs that are maybe the most successful that you recognize this attitude. Like Cara Finn, a lot of their underage players have spoken about how while they're so successful at senior level, that when they came up underage, it wasn't about how many titles they won. It was about developing them as players and developing the kind of love of the game. And then Cara Finn ended up bearing the fruit of it, because these children are coming back every year because they enjoy it so much. And they've developed so much then over the years that they develop into proper players at senior level where competition matters more than it should do at underage. So you'd like to, like, to be fair, I have heard this kind of you know, a desire to implement this attitude across the GAA in recent years. But it's good, like, Christy O'Connor always writes good stuff, and this is a really kind of this is a really refreshing kind of positive article, and it's good to see the likes of Liam Sheedy sharing it as well. So the more that this attitude becomes pervasive across the GAA, the better.
I could see it potentially working up to maybe under 12, under 14, Conan, but under 16 minor, I think that players should start kind of honing their competitive skills at that stage. But definitely up until maybe the age of 12, 13, not like, imagine an under 20, under 12 manager, under 10 shouting at you about winning a county final at that age.
Yeah,
it's not right.
That's silly at that age. Like, I mean, some people listening might even think that under 16 and stuff is too young as well. But I think there's definitely a balance to be had there. Like, you know, like, you coach under 16s, and like, you would have had 30, at least 30 games in the season, and four of them were championship. I think that's the balance you get. Once I got the championship, I was always very clear and saying, look, we're not doing any favors for anybody. No, we've had a whole year. Everybody's played in the league. Everybody's played friendlies. Now we're going to try and win the championship. And I think that's fine. And like, it's good that you're mentioning that, because like, the best thing I was ever told if you're coaching a team is the most important feedback you'll get is how many people are coming to training. And like, if you can do that and you can be upfront and honest with people, and they know that come August there's going to be an 8-week period where it's just championship, then that's fine. Like, if you've got your chances the whole way through, then grand. And then like, the model, like where Christy O'Connor's article started, was that idea of like, you know, not failing people in school. It was just like, not yet. They got a not yet instead of failed. And like, you know, late developers are close to my heart, Willie. Like, so, like, you know, the idea that you would just cast somebody and put them in their box at that age is mad. Even an under 16 level, it's just a not yet. You're not playing the championship, but I'm going to play loads, and then come minors next year, you're going to get loads of opportunities too. And the only thing I didn't like about the New Zealand model, I don't know what you think, is the three even teams. So rather than having an A, B, and C teams, they wanted just a mixture, having three teams that are all the same quality. And I don't know, I think that's fine, having A, B, and C teams, and like, having people work their way up through it, as long as they're both getting, or they're all getting the same attention.
Yeah, because there is a bit of an embarrassment of being on the C team, but at the same time, if you're mixing it around that much, and I wouldn't agree with it, I'm like you, I prefer A, B, and C, because you're playing at your own level. You'll have a really strong A player who's getting so frustrated with the useless fella that they'll actually stop passing it to them.
Yeah.
You know, and then you'll be just completely stranded, and it's not going to be fun. You know, whereas I think there's definitely games you can all play together, you know, to enjoy it and feel inclusive. But like, I mean, if you're talking about at matches, you have to split the standards, I think, because these are children at the end of the day. And I'm not going to, I, I remember taking mental notes of saying, I will not give the ball to that lad again, because every time I give it to him, he's dropping it or losing it. Yeah. Like, but then again, it comes back to Conor. This is probably in a game that I wanted to win. And if you're making it not about winning, but then again, what the hell are you playing for if there's not some sort of competitiveness to it? I don't know, Conor. Like, I mean, let's not go all too bloody inclusive on this and not want to actually win a championship.
No, like I thought when I initially read the point that Colin's talking about there in the division of A, B and C, I thought, well, that's just simply not going to work at a lot of club level, the club level particularly, like throughout the GAA, if that's what we're referring to. But then Christy O'Connor kind of went on then to, he mentioned how it's been used at a county level by Cork, for example. Now, they enter two even teams in, you know, an under 14 or an under 16 competition. I think when you get to that level, if you have 50 of the best under 16s in Cork, I think the standard would be quite good across the board that you could nearly afford to do that, as opposed to where it's going to be completely different at club level. What I was going to say is that I think there's definitely a way to marry the two, and that like you don't have to overstate the importance of winning, but like you don't completely dilute it either. Like, you know, like I know in my club, for example, we would never have been used to winning things. You know, like winning a lot of things, for example. But like the greatest days that we've had, and like a lot of players that I played would be the days that you remember when you won an under 14 title or you won an under 16 title or something like that, and you remember those 20 years on. It's just as Colin said, it's all about balance. So as long as you don't have a club where the mentality is putting too much pressure on the players and that they're not enjoying themselves, but at the same time, especially when you get to under 16, a minor level, that there can be. You can be encouraged to try and win the thing too, but it's just you know there's a balance to be met there, and I think that the better clubs and the better teams, and maybe the better teams that they're referring to in New Zealand, probably have that balance nailed on.
Yeah, I think we all remember training sessions where there's not enough for a full game, and you might go backs and forwards with two other lads kicking it in, and the fellas who are left over sent down the other end of the field on their own. Like, I mean, stuff like that's not fair. Like, they're the fellas that will drop out, and they're maybe fellas that might not be as confident, and they might be left the whole way down there just to play a game of soccer on their own. Like, I've seen this happen, and not like nobody even sent down to coach them. Like, I definitely think there's improvements there. I think you're right. The balance is the most important thing, without going all New Zealand on it and trying to copy them. But I definitely think within clubs, if you're involved in a club, like in a committee or in the management of the club, and you see a manager sending lads down like that, like I did plenty of times, that you tell them that's unacceptable. You know, like, I mean, maybe that's kind of the thing you might learn from it. We'll move on from that, lads, because we talked a lot about Kilo Emmett's and how they were hit with the 48-week suspension. So they're still facing this 48-week suspension. So they had an appeal to the Leinster Council thrown out. They lost it. Now, that wasn't an appeal against the 48-week suspension. This was the appeal against the 750 quid fine that was imposed on them to not show up, or for not showing up at an under-16 A final. So they didn't win that. So they've since paid the 750. So their next step now is to go to the DRA. It's cast serious doubts about the Longford Championship, because as they're appealing this stuff, the Longford Championship can't go ahead. It's an absolute mess. Apparently, they were up in Cavan last Friday night, and Porrick Duffy was brought in to try and broker some sort of a settlement. And I'm not really sure what kind. Apparently they were meeting for 3.5 hours. So I presume this is Killoe and the county board. But what would they be trying to broker? What settlement could they come to? Like, I mean, these are two sides that are on opposite, kind of taking opposite positions. And now the Killoe have paid the fine. It doesn't seem to have fixed it. So what would Porrick Duffy have been able to broker, Conan? I'm not sure. I can't really get my head around what's going on here.
Doesn't seem like you brokered too much, because we're still locked in this battle. And like, unless, you know, obviously they got the suspension because they didn't pay the fine, and now they paid the fine a few weeks later, and they're trying to get the suspension lifted or suspended or whatever. I don't know. If it was me, you know, it's very easy for me sitting on the outside, but I probably would have went to the Leinster Council and appealed the suspension, so you could carry on your GAA activity. You could keep playing underage and play in the championship. And
they haven't imposed a 750 fine. They lost the case that resulted in the 750 fine, if you know what I mean. So now that they say, we lost that case, here's your 750, you'd imagine that should be the end of it.
I would have thought so. Well, I just think they should have worried about the money later, I think, and just tried to get the suspension lifted. And, you know, and then maybe, like, go back to the Leinster Council or DRAs are talking about now and then talk about the money. But this is a mess. And if it's holding up the rest of the Longford clubs, I can only imagine what everybody's thinking down there.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a mess. Clonagale, remember we're talking about them, Connor, on Monday. So they've since issued a statement about this. So this is Clonagale. They were supposed to play Ballyboden junior team on Sunday. Yeah, and the previous week, a Ballyboden junior player tested positive for the coronavirus. So he trained on Sunday morning with the Ballyboden junior team, apparently. So it was only 7 days. We were talking about 10 days last week, but one of their players actually reached out to me and he was saying that they had made a deal not to go to the media, but one of the players did and didn't even get the information correct. So it was 7 days later, and apparently the Clondegale squad were split 50-50 on whether to just go ahead with the game 7 days later or whether not to. Now, the problem with this is that they kind of made their feelings known to Ballyboden, who agreed to postpone the game. The referee was happy to postpone the game, you know, for until the 14 days were up. But the Dublin County Board told them that if they don't fulfil the fixture, they're going to get thrown out. Now, what's really unfair for me about this is that, like, we're talked at the start of the show about Plunkett and Rahini, and their game was rescheduled at a later date. Why is it OK for a senior football game to be postponed because of a positive case, but a junior hurling game, the Clonagale are being forced to play that game, even though, you know, there was a positive test and they want to make sure that they follow, you know, the procedure of 14 days?
So the only question, when I kind of weighed up the two cases here, Willie, the only question that I had was that is the difference here that the close contacts had been identified for the Ballyboden players and not for the Rahini players because the game was cancelled the day before? Would that be why there's a difference between the two cancellations? Otherwise I couldn't understand it, because there's no reason why Dublin GAA would cancel one game because it's senior football and they wouldn't the other because it's down the divisions in hurling. That seems to me completely unfair to Clonagale.
Right. So, like, I mean, I suppose the junior player would have trained that Sunday morning, so they would have been casual contacts. And you think it's because the Rahini players or the Rahini hadn't identified the close contacts?
This is me speculating, Wooly, all I could see was that the Rahini game was cancelled the day before the Rahini game against Plunkett was meant to take place, whereas there seems to be a bigger gap between when the case was identified in Ballyboden and when their game was meant to take place.
Yeah. That's,
I'm speculating this as the only reason I can see is that there's a difference between...
Okay, you had me panicked. It's like you were asking me a question that I should have known the answer to there, Colin. You can pick it up from there.
Well, no, I went and looked at the Rahini case just to see what the difference was, and their statement said that they had consulted with the Dublin County Board to determine the next best course of action, and then the Dublin County Board told them to shut down the senior football panel and not train or play matches until all the panellists were tested and returned negative. So... there must have just, I don't know the ins and outs. And, like, remember as well, we're talking about, like, Clonagale, who weren't the club involved. I know they had to play Ballyboden,
Unless
Ballyboden were given the okay, and Clonagale were still a little bit sceptical of it. But this is Rahini, who were told to shut down. Ballyboden didn't shut down.
No, so I wonder why they didn't shut down, isn't it?
Yeah. But it does, like, I saw your tweet as well, and it does seem a bit mad, you know, that the junior game was still going to go ahead. Like, in every other club, I saw, like, and, like, you know, we can't take everything from Twitter, but I saw Ballyboden getting a bit of grief for not shutting down, but maybe they were told not to shut down.
No, we're not criticising Ballyboden. Like, I mean, sure, like, we know that clubs don't have to shut down. They all just seem to be doing that. But, like, I mean, I don't see how an extra week would have killed anyone when both clubs were agreeing to it, considering the exceptional circumstances we're in. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing as well, especially, like, the unfair thing to me is that Ballyboden were open to rescheduling the game and there was a date free for them to play it. Do you know what I mean? So, like, I would have thought that there might be common sense on all sides. And they're like, well, if Clonagale are up for it and Ballyboden are up for it, well, then we just play the game another date. And then I was thinking, well, then do WGA wonder then if there's a chance of precedent? Do you know that, like, well, if they granted this dispensation to these two clubs, but then you look at it and say, well, you take it by a case-by-case basis. And if this case comes up again and there's no alternative date to play the fixture, as there was in this case, well, then you have to go with the county board decision.
Yeah, exactly. We'll finish up on a bad note, lads, because Billy McCarthy, we talked about him and his road back from there's loads of examples of this. Back from two cruciates, and he was back playing with Turles Sarsfields, and how he had made the breakthrough a couple of years ago, and you know, he was back in the mix again. The poor fella did his anterior cruciate ligament for a third time in 3 years. So, like, I mean, he's gone again. Like, I don't know. I used to complain about hamstring injuries and how they'd mess me up for huge important matches. But, like, I mean, there's no way mentally Cam and I would be able to deal with this. I don't know about you. Like, I mean, this is just like talking about how strong you would need to be not to throw in the towel and feel sorry for yourself. I think I would be more the feeling sorry for myself and I'm done with this shit kind of line.
That's exactly where I was at, because I was talking to somebody about it earlier and I was just like my words were, that's so grim. I really don't know how some people do it. Like, you know, to come back from it twice, never mind now I have to do it a third time. And not only to come back from it twice, I heard it, he was man of the match against Killeran in the first game out. So he's come back better than ever. Like, you know, and I like the mental strength that you'd have to go through all that again. It's cruciate. No, I wouldn't diss on hamstring injuries, because I always remember Jack McCarron from Monaghan. Remember, he was in, they said the hamstring injury out of everything was the worst thing that they ever had, because he always thought he was good enough to come back and he kept getting injured again. So I can understand why that would be tough on you as well, Willie, but like a cruciate is just the worst, because you have to get surgery and then go through all that rehab again. Christ almighty.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely different. Terrible. So best wishes to Billy McCarthy from the show. There's no doubt about that. And we'll see whether you can come back from the third time or whether you throw your hat at it. I wouldn't criticise you if you threw your hat at it. But anyways, best wishes from the show. Right, we'll leave it there, lads, and we'll be back with the matches that are on TV this weekend.
Let's chill the beans. There still is a lot of work to be done yet. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. But I tell you, give us a year and a bit. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. Let's chill the beans. Beans. Let's chill the beans. Let's chill the beans. Beans. Let's chill the beans. There still is a lot of work to be done yet. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. But I tell you, give us a year, year and a bit. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans.
All right, so the matches on TV. On Friday night, we on TG Cahir, we have Trillick versus Killy Clocher. Not expecting an open game of fast attacking football here. We know what Tyrone Club football is like, whether they like to admit it or not. It is pretty defensive. This is a quarter final. There's only been four rounds of the Tyrone Championship, but there's plenty of intercounty players on show. We know Killy Clocher has Mark Bradley, and they have the McCanns, and then we have obviously Matty Donnelly, the two Donnellys, and Rory Brennan and Lee Brennan for Trillick. So loads of quality on show, Conan. It's just whether we get a quality game. Actually, we give out about Tyrone Club football. Jeez, Killarney Legion were pretty defensive last Sunday when we were watching them. So it's not just unique to Tyrone, because I know you often get backlash out of Tyrone. But at the same time, I'm expecting a 10-9 type result, kind of scoreline here.
Yeah, it could be even as low as the Port Leash game there.
Yeah.
That'd be really bad. But like, yeah, I saw
you got me there.
The Trillick had the first game against Galbally, and everyone was raving about Lee Brennan again, our man. So apparently he was turning it on. But I went and checked that scoreline, and it was very low scoring. I think he scored 1-9 or something that day out. So I thought like Lee Brennan probably ran up a big score. He got six himself. In fairness, when it's a low scoring game, you're doing well. But like Trillick just have such a nice, a lovely spine. Like Rory Kelly, a fullback for him, is class. You mentioned Rory Brennan, Lee Brennan inside, obviously, and then just Matty and Richie Donnelly in the engine room. It's such a lovely weighted team that they have, and yeah, it'd be hard to see past them. And obviously, they're last year's champions as well.
Yeah, and the TG Cahir also have on Sunday deferred coverage of the Monaghan senior championship match. It's a quarter final as well. Carrick and Cross Emmets versus Mara Clune. Might have some interest in seeing Tommy Freeman for Mara Clune there. And they have the Waterford county final on Sunday as the live game. We'll get to that in a minute. Saturday on RT, Connor, we have two of the Mayo quarterfinals, Ballintubber against Knockmore and Ballyhadreen against Briefy. The second one, probably the more attractive, arguably, for the county players, would you say?
Yeah, I would, even though like a lot of the Bala lads, actually, the Bala lads that people might be familiar with haven't been on the panel. So the likes of Andy's obviously retired. I don't think Keane Handy has been involved lately. David Drake has stepped aside as well.
And hang on, is Andy not playing club even? He retired from everything.
They're not involved with Mayo anymore, Willie. Sorry.
Oh, right.
No, Andy is still going strong. But like he's indicated that this will probably be his last season. Andy is a selector while playing as well.
I'd love that. The security you'd have there. Like, I mean, give me a break. I'd love it. I'd love to be a player manager.
Yeah. So, like, it's not as if he's not going to be sure of his place, in fairness. Let's not kid ourselves. But he's still going strong. Balladream were very strong in the group. I think they had, like, they have a points difference of plus 20. Like, they were last year's county finalists as well, and ran Ballintubber pretty close. And then Brafe, he obviously came out of the group of death. They got to the county final the year before as well. And like we know from having watched them against Castlebar a couple of weeks ago that they were in decent shape, and the O'Shea's were very much to the fore. So that's definitely the most attractive of the two of them. Well, that's not to say anything against Ballintubber and Knockmore. Like Ballintubber had a blip earlier on against Aughamore. They drew their first game because they conceded the last minute goal, but they've been very strong since.
Ballintubber aren't great either. I've seen enough of them. They'd have three or four lads now that would be fairly harmless on their team. I've seen them in county finals. But they're not Ballintubber are not a team. I don't know. If Ballintubber are winning it regularly, then I don't know if the Mayo Championship is as strong as it used to be.
Well, I'm talking about this level, Willie, I suppose.
Like
Ballintubber at this level for a start, like they've been very, very comfortable since they had that blip earlier on. And Knockmore having lost to Ballinagh the last day, this is the luck of the draw they got. They'll be cursing themselves for not winning that game. I agree with you to a certain degree, Willie.
I do think the standard of Mayo, where you're looking at teams coming out of it being all Ireland contenders, I think that might be gone.
Well, maybe because they're up against Cara Finn and Connacht as well. Do you know what I mean? So to be fair to Ballintubber, like Ballintubber aren't the easiest on the eye. But of all the clubs that like, and we're talking about clubs like Crokes and other teams that have got, like, let's be honest, whoopings against Cara Finn in the last few years. Ballintubber have always ran them very close in Connacht. And I know they're playing in like November, December, like when the ground mightn't be as hard, and Cara Finn come alive when they play in Croke Park. But like, to be fair to Ballintubber, they have ran Cara Finn very close. And I just like, I know, Willie, that like they're not the most attractive. They are quite defensive. They are a nightmare, absolute nightmare to play against. They're very tough tackling, they're very well organized, and they're very hard to beat. And that's why they're favourites. That's why they're favourites to win again this year. So like I think they'll come out of it. The attractive one on Saturday is definitely Ballyhadreen versus Brafe. But I would still, and despite me talking up Westport on Monday, I would still have Ballintubber favourites to come out of it again.
Right. Okay. And not on TV this weekend is Skerries versus St Jude's in Parnell Park on Saturday. The big question here, Colin, is are you back fit? Can you tug out? Because I'd have a lovely little wing forward role for you there now, and just dropping back and sitting in front of Kevin McManaman, just to starve him of the possession. If he gets possession, I want you doubling up on him. Don't get too close to him or he'll just push you off him. Just shadow him, make him play it, get somebody else in around him. That's your job for the day, Colin. Now go out and do it.
I'm back, Willie. I am back.
Are you back?
I'm not. No, I have to get surgery.
So how are the Skerries feeling about this?
Oh, they're looking great. Like, to be honest, if I was back, I don't think I would be making that team. It's so fast, like, and they're so powerful. Like, you know, joking, like, Brian Cullen's the only one who's not an absolute flyer in it. Like, the two wing forwards at the minute, you know, when you watch it, when you're not playing, you're like, oh, shit, it's like, it's the two boys here playing midfield for Dublin under-20s. You know, so you're thinking, oh, Christ, like, how am I going to get back in there? Now, they're actually scoring as well as getting back in front of Kevin McManaman. You know, but they're going well. Like, they obviously beat Thomas Davis. They came from 7 down against Round Towers Lusk and beat them by 7, so there's a bit of confidence there now. Quarter final, nothing to lose, really. But I don't want to talk them up, so St Jude should win comfortably.
We know the two big games is Nafina and Ballymun, and it's Crokes and Vincent. So that's a full round of Dublin quarterfinals on this weekend. But like I mentioned, the big game of the weekend, because it's the second county final of the weekend, it's the second hurling county final in a hurling county, which is just trying to get them played off so they can train with the counties. So, okay, well, that's probably controversial, or they won't be too happy to hear that. It's Passage versus Ballygunner. Ballygunner will be unbackable favourites for this one. Passage have only ever won it once. It's a small little town with over only 1,000 people. Amazingly, their last county, their only county final win was in 2013, where they beat Ballygunner. This is before Ballygunner went on to win their 6 in a row. So since that loss to Passage, Ballygunner haven't been beaten since that day in Waterford Club Hurling. So this is the big one, obviously. And to help us look ahead to this one, a man who knows a good bit about the teams, Maurice Shanahan, joined us on the line now. How's it going, Maurice?
Well, Colin, how are you? Not too bad.
Ballygunner, how good are they, I suppose, is the question. You got to see them up close and personal last weekend.
Unfortunately, we did, yeah. But I know they're the best club team in Waterford, Colin, with the last, I think they won for 7 in a row. That just tells you how good they are. And to be honest with you, people are saying, would the hunger go from them? But it's not going from them at all, because they have one or two lads coming in every year, I suppose, and they're only winning their first, you know.
They're keeping it going,
and then you have the older lads like the Mahoney's, Shane Sullivan, Barry Cox, and all them driving as well, Stephen O'Keefe inside the goal. He never shuts up, really, to be honest with you, but that's where it comes from, I suppose. That's where the drive comes from, all them lads, and it's unbelievable, Colin. We've seen it on Saturday night ourselves as a club. We thought we had a chance going down, but unfortunately we didn't turn up either now, to be honest with you. We gave them, they battered us in the first 15 minutes and our heads dropped, I suppose, and the game was over then after that.
Right, because you were coming off a brilliant year, weren't you? Like, I mean, you're running up huge scores. You were personally, but the team was as well. And you found yourselves in the semi-final. But I don't know, like, I mean, maybe they're, in fairness, they're winning county finals handy enough. They seem to be a step ahead of everybody else.
Oh, definitely. And I suppose, as a club, we couldn't have been in a better position, I suppose, going in on Saturday night. But we just came up against the best club team in Waterford for years. And to be honest, like I said, they're just so driven. The likes of Philip Manny there, a centre-back, he never stopped giving encouragement to the players around him. And if it was the first minute or the last minute, Colin, it didn't matter. They just wanted to get over the line. And that's just the way they are. But you can see it. I suppose it's great for Ballygunner, but unfortunately for Waterford, other club teams in Waterford, you can see they're winning everything, minor, under 14, everything all the way up. And they have two or three teams at some grades coming up, like, and how other clubs are going to get up to that is the question, you know?
Yeah, it is a question. So you scored 338. We've been talking about you on the show a good bit in the last month, and you scored 338 in the lead up to Ballygunner game, got 6 in that game. Like, you scored 217 in one game. Like, is this exceptional form you're in at the moment, Maurice, or are they kind of tallies you like, without being, you know, bragging, would you run up big tallies in club games usually?
Yeah, I suppose they have been big tallies, but down through the years, I suppose, for my club, I have been hitting big tallies anyway, I suppose, because when you're on the freeze and all that kind of stuff, it helps. But I suppose this year, I suppose, the 3 games, Colin, I did perform well in, you know, and the scores came, but partially Saturday night, I was Barry Coughlin kind of put a stop to that for me, you know, but that just tells you what kind of player he is too, to be honest.
Right. Okay, and like, I mean, well, I presume as well the supply would have dried up a good bit in your defence on Saturday night as compared to other games.
Yeah, I suppose. To be honest, a good few balls still came in, I suppose, but it just, when they brought the ball down in front of me or whoever, or the other lads on the team, there are 2 or 3 of them in like that. And you can't, like, there's many years we don't have a offer in on our own, and it dries up if you're 2-1 or 3-2, you know, you're not going to win it unless you win it clean. And I suppose Ballygunner just wanted to get the ball to the ground, and they're in then to sweep it up around us. So.
Right, and that's it. If a fullback's trying to spoil you, it's very little you can do, I presume, with the tricks of the trade.
No, that's it. Like, there'll be a lot of pulling and dragging going on, but every team are doing it. We do it as well, so you can't give up about that. So.
Yeah, come here. Like, we've been talking on the show about you and about being dropped off the Waterford panel, and about, you know, quotes Liam Cahill made about he's going to look at club form and things like that. And you're in great form with the club. You know, do you think that you know, that decision could be revisited, or have you heard anything, or what's your thoughts?
No, I haven't heard. I haven't heard a thing, to be honest with you. To be honest, I don't think I will.
Really?
I don't. Yeah, I don't think I will, to be honest with you. But that's, look, I have no problem with that. If Liam and his backroom team think that's the best way for Watford, I leave them off, to be honest.
Right, because, like, I mean, I was reading some quotes from Liam Cahill, and I didn't, like, at least he rang yourself a Noel, you know, and I'm just interested to know what he said to you and what the reasons were.
Yeah, I suppose when you rang me, I was on a side with the whole mixer, to be honest, on Saturday evening.
So. Do you remember the phone call?
I can remember it just about, to be honest with you. But look, he just said there's no reasons, really, to be honest. He didn't give us a reason, to be honest with you. He just said, myself and Noel are gone off the panel, and he said there could be one or two more, but it didn't work out like that. It was just myself and Noel, the two that got the bullet, I suppose, and maybe from the backlash, because there was a small bit of backlash in Watford at the time, that it was just the two of us. Maybe he didn't go through with the others, but we'll never know that, I suppose.
Right, right. And he said that you were both respectful when they rang him up. Like, did you question him on anything, or what were you, like, I suppose you're at the Stag, so you're probably trying to get off the phone rather than keep the conversation going.
Yeah, to be honest, I suppose I was kind of took me back, to be honest with you. Colin, do you know, because yeah. Just for the two of us to go, and then a week or two later, you hear the 50 lads in there training, getting a trial and all this, and myself and Noel, after giving so much we did to Watford, that we didn't even get a chance to prove ourselves to Liam. Even if we're in there 5 or 6 weeks and he turned around and said, look lads, you're not up to it, you couldn't argue with the man, I suppose. But look, I suppose, like, every manager has their way to play it, but we'll see now over the next few months, did he get it right, I suppose.
So, like, I mean, I'm trying to make sense of it. For hurling reasons, I'm not Liam Cahill, and he's his own man, and he knows the type of players he wants. I wouldn't see the hurling reasons. There was a lot of rumours coming out of Pádraig Fanning's squad last year and rumblings with players. Like, I mean, did that involve you and Noel, for example? Like, is that something Liam could have heard about and maybe not wanted you in for different reasons outside of hurling?
Yeah, I suppose. Look, I suppose last year with Pádraig, there's a lot of talk outside the county that a lot of players aren't happy in this. But I was inside the camp, and no one kicked up, to be honest with you, Colin. You know, no one kind of questioned the way people were saying it either. Like, you know, rumours yourself, and people had legs to stuff. And to be honest with you, as players, last year we had to take a lot of criticism as well. And like, I don't think Liam could say that myself and Noel were causing trouble inside that camp, because we definitely didn't, to be honest with you.
Right, okay. So, like, I mean, yeah, there's not... Do you have any theory on why yourself and Noel went? Like, I presume you're in contact with each other after it happened and stuff. Like, I mean, have you any theory on it, without being anyway critical of Liam, because he's his own decision to make? Have you got a theory on where it could have come from, or what, you know, happened?
No. I actually don't, because, to be honest, like, for Liam to come in and just get rid of two players, that's like, you say something to you as a waterman and came in because he'd be at all the water games, you know, he'd be at all the club games.
Yeah, you see, he has Waterford selectors, though, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does, you know, he has two selectors from Water. One is from Ballygunner and one is from Ballyduff Upper, so I don't know.
Is there anything, you don't know, is there anything in that, potentially? Yeah.
The two of them will be rivalry clubs to myself and Noel, but I wouldn't think anything came out of that either, to be honest. But you never know. I just find it very hard for a man to come in from Tipperary and just get rid of two lads like that, like, you know.
Yeah, yeah. It would be interesting to see what he does now, because, like, I mean, you and Noel's form has been outstanding in the club. And the thing about the whole season being stopped is it almost feels like this is a new season now starting after the club. You know what I mean? So, I wouldn't give up. I wouldn't give up hope altogether if I was you.
Yeah, maybe not, Colin. Maybe not. I can't see the phone ringing, to be honest with you. But, like, he did say on the phone to me that evening when he rang me, like, that the door is always open, maybe, but like, I kind of said there and then, Jesus, if I'm not good enough for you now, how am I going to be good enough for you in 6 months' time, or 3 months' time down the line? But look, he has my number, if he wants to call me, I suppose.
Yeah,
exactly. So how would you think your form has been like at Intercounty? Like in the last couple of years under Derek, you were kind of given a super subs role. Like, I mean, you're only 30.
No, yeah, and I suppose my best year playing for Offaly was 2015, I suppose.
Yeah.
And I suppose in 16, 17, 18, I wouldn't say I had great years, but I wouldn't say I had that bad of years either coming on, because the year we got to the All-Ireland final, every time I came on, I made an impact off the bench. And the one thing about Derek, he's a wicked superstitious man. And I suppose if you're making an impact like that, Derek always knew with 20 minutes to go, gee, if I bring this fella on, he's going to maybe set up a score, score a score, and win a free. And I suppose the one thing about Derek Murray, he did say he had his starters and he had his finishers, and he said nearly finishers are more important than his starters. But look, again, I suppose the manager has to do what he has to do to pick the right team. And to be fair to Derry, for a good few years he got it right in Waterford, to be honest.
Yeah, no, he definitely did. Like, I mean, the thing about Waterford is that, like, for the role that you play and being able to actually fetch a ball and make it stick, like, for me, the two Bennetts, they're good players, but it doesn't really stick to them as much. Like, and I don't want you to comment on them in any way, but, like, I mean, I don't know, there seems to be a role for that. Even with Derek McGrath, I used to think, why would you not be on from the start? But I do accept that reasoning, that if you're getting 20 minutes and Dublin were like that at times, bringing on good impact players, that was kind of almost the fashion 2 or 3 years ago when it started.
Yeah, definitely. And I suppose the one thing about the Waterford team at the moment, they're kind of all the same kind of players.
Yeah.
And they're good players now. Jesus, the Bennetts are good players. The Patrick Corden is a good player. They have good forwards. But at times, you have to change up and go long as well. And I don't know, do they have that many big lads in there at the moment, to be honest with you. I don't know for a fact who's in there either now, but they could have. But look, I think you need different players for different games, I suppose. And especially this year, Colm, I suppose, with the championship coming on so late, it's going to be mucky, so you might be a big fella. I don't know, to be honest. But
yeah, you could need somebody to mix it up.
You could be. Yeah.
So were you happy to accept that kind of subs role and getting the 15, 20 minutes, or like were you ringing Dan in the evening saying, what the hell is going on here?
I would have had a few conversations with Dan, to be honest with you. It's kind of hard for Dan as well, because at times I thought I should have been on the team, and you'd be ringing Dan, and to be honest with you, it's easy to ring Dan, but Dan wasn't the manager of the team. At the end of the day, like Derek would always say, I went face to face with him and asked him why he wasn't on the team, and then again would say he has his starts and finishers, and he's like, he would say, I could throw you in this Sunday, but he said your role, I suppose. And I suppose, look, I was never happy not playing with Waterford or not starting. I'm happy with it, but I suppose when you get home on that Friday night, I probably sulked for a lot of it, and then on Saturday morning, Colm, I had to get up and think of the team and drive on for Sunday, I suppose, whatever way I could help the lads.
You strike me as being similar to Dan in that you're kind of a streak player, that when your confidence is up, like, you're unmarkable, but if you kind of lose that confidence, you're not the same player at all.
No, definitely, yeah. It's like anyone that knows me, I suppose, they know it's all about confidence with me, I suppose. I mean, my confidence is down, to be honest with you. I wouldn't be worth too much to the team. But again, I suppose the way you get confidence is by having people that believe in you.
Yeah.
And I suppose, to be honest with you, I would never say a bad word about Derek. He mightn't have started me at times, but I had a great relationship with him too, to be honest.
So Derek, even though you're getting 20 minutes, was able to package that in a way that he does have a lot of confidence in you, I suppose.
I don't question the confidence Derek had in me, to be honest with you. To be fair to the man, he always... I started some games every year as well, to be honest with you, but I suppose the big games, the All-Ireland semi-finals, and they see me as an impact, and I had a problem with that, but like I said, I had to pack that the minute I get home. I wake up on the Saturday morning and I helped the team the way I could, and I suppose if that was for 20 minutes or 25 minutes, but suppose if you're coming on and you are impacting Colin, it makes it a lot easier than coming on and not doing a thing, I suppose.
So have you spoken to like sports psychologists or different people involved around the team about, you know, your confidence and how to kind of avoid the confidence, you know, losing the confidence, or how, you know, how to mentally kind of block that, those kind of, you know, thoughts in your head?
Yeah, I suppose I would have talked to a few there involved with the water teams down through the years, and I definitely would have. And yeah, I suppose the one thing about me, I think I build my own confidence, to be honest with you. I think when I'm playing well, I think I'm kind of unstoppable at times, you know. But like if I go out there at times as well, Colin, I might be, my confidence might be down. I might go home to my club and I might go in and play a challenge match. People might even know I played it, to be honest.
Right.
Just trying to get my confidence up. You go away to your club, you hit a few frees, you get your confidence up that way, and then again, you get one or two from play and one or two goals, and then your confidence is up straight away. You know, it's very easy to get your confidence up, I think, at times as well, to be honest.
Yeah. Small little thing will trigger it back again.
Yeah, small things, definitely small things, yeah.
Yeah, Jason, interesting. And tell me about Passage then. You're like, I presume you're in contact with Noel or wishing him best of luck, or, you know, having chats about the whole Waterford thing. Like, I mean, they've come from nowhere, a small club like Lismore.
Yeah, definitely. And to be honest with you, if you said Passage being a county final at the start of the year, I said people would have kind of laughed at you. But that's just tell you what kind of club below in Passage they are, because they're a small community, to be honest. They're very small. And they're to Ballygunner, so there'd be a big rivalry there, and they're a credit. Like, I think they were around 3 or 4 to 1 to beat Mount Sinai last Sunday, and the week before they were underdog to beat Roamore, and they came through it in two games with flying colours, to be honest with you.
Right.
You know, because people were saying Mount Sinai were off the up again. To be fair to Passage, they scored 17 points in 30 minutes of the first half. They scored 17 points, and I have no doubt Passage will believe in themselves on Sunday, Colum, you know, the kind of community they are below, and I have no doubt they'll give everything they have. Do I think to beat Ballygunner? I probably don't, to be honest with you. I don't think there's anything in Munster in my Ballygunner the way they're playing at the moment, but I could be a bit biased there as well.
No, in fairness, I'd say Ballygunner will go in favourites in Munster if they win the county final. A funny thing about Passage and Ballygunner, you say they're rivals, but they play football together with Galtier.
Yeah, that's the problem. They play football with Galtier, but to be honest with you, there's not too many of the Passage hurlers or the Ballygunner hurlers play.
Is there not?
If you pick two or three of each team, I say that's about it. You know, you wouldn't have 8 or 9, to be honest with you.
Right, okay.
Noel, the Connors was one play football, or the Mahoney, Sullivan's, none of them will play football, so they're all hurling families, I suppose.
Right, I was picturing them all out training Tuesday night with the footballers after killing each other. That's not going to happen.
No, that won't happen anyhow, to be honest, but right. I'd like to Chelsea Hutchison and them play the football with goals here. And there might be one or two out of the Passage lads, but I can't think of too many now, to be honest.
Right. Okay, well, come here, Morris. Thanks very much for giving us your time there. And we'll talk to you again. Hopefully, keep your eye on your phone and answer private numbers as well. That's the, even if you don't answer them, you'll start answering the private numbers now.
I start answering all the phones now.
All the best, Morris. Thanks for taking
the time. Bye.
All right, great stuff from Morris there. We will be back on Monday as usual, and we'll take a look back at all the weekend's action. We'll talk to you then. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken. Let it go, 'cause I won't see you later, when we're not allowed to talk here.